This show is brought to you by Nedbank Business Banking. Wouldn't you rather have a bank that puts the expert back into expertise? Search Nedbank Bigger Picture Business Banking.
Welcome to Business Watch. Well, the past year has seen exceptional activity for private equity, especially in Africa, with economies across the continent still struggling in the grip of the pandemic after 2020 and vaccine rollouts lagging behind those of developed nations. Expectations were set low. But by the end of the first half of last year, we had seen roughly 20 billion rand in private equity investments made across the continent, and total investments for the year are set to exceed those of 2020. While the past 2 years have shown just how difficult it is to be certain of anything in this environment, it's certainly a promising sign going into the new year. But numbers alone don't tell us everything. We should certainly be on the lookout for, over the course of the next year, any potential disruption. We've got rising interest rates, a rising inflation around the world, and we also know that there are continued themes and trends around ESG and concerns for climate change. And there are growth areas and industries such as e-commerce that have certainly got a boost from the pandemic. With rates set to rise, how will private equity respond to that environment as the cost of capital increases? Well, let's welcome our panelists to find out. Samantha Pockroy, founder and CEO of Sonari Capital, John Ballew, head of private equity at Bowman's, Langa Madonko, SAVCA board member and deputy president of the Association of Black Securities and Investment Professionals, and Andrew Dewar, managing partner at private equity firm Rockwood. Welcome, everyone. John, happy new year. Initially, we saw GPs respond to the crisis by focusing on liquidity concerns, cash flow of their portfolio companies, and really adjusting their strategies. It really wasn't about new deals at all. That eased into the end of 2020 and certainly into 21 as well as the dust settled. What stands out for you last year in the private equity industry?
So I think it was a much better year than 2020. That may not be saying much in and of itself, but I do think that we saw a much better level of activity, mainly in the mid-market, probably a lot of development in South Africa in the venture capital space. So deal levels picked up. I still think South Africa, the South African story is difficult. It's difficult to raise international capital for South Africa, purely South Africa. But I do think the African story is good. I think private equity is less focused on economic fundamentals than it is on finding good assets that it can go out buy at the right price. So, and I think that will continue. I think we may see some, you know, foreign funds with excess capital in their markets looking to find local assets that they can buy. So I'm reasonably optimistic for 2022. I'm not sure it's going to be an absolutely bumper year. You know, if you look back at 2021, M&A activity in South Africa was really buoyant, but I don't think that that followed through into the private equity activity levels. I think private equity was solid, but I think it certainly wasn't stellar like public M&A was last year.
Andrew, building on that theme, what we did see was the valuation theme in the smaller mid-cap listed space create really attractive opportunities for private equity funds to come and have a look at our market. And if you park the competition authorities to one side and what they did around the Burger King deal and sapping confidence around that decision, what do you see as the key highlights in the private equity space from an M&A perspective last year?
I think we certainly at Rockwood were quite active. 2020 was a year where we had to pull everything tight. We had to renegotiate all of our bank covenants. We spent a lot of time with our management teams. At first, you know, a lot of Zoom calls and so forth. And then when we moved into 2021, we were able to sell QuickSpace, so we had a decent exit on QuickSpace. So there were opportunities to sell assets, and we were able to do that successfully. But having said that, certainly not at the top of the cycle in terms of pricing. So you could sell an asset. We were then able to acquire two different businesses. We bought a business called Global Roofing, And we bought that out of liquidation, which was a really good opportunity for us. And it's a business that had previously been managed by this team when we were in APSA. And then we were able to, through our portfolio, acquire Noone's Carpets. So there were good acquisition opportunities if you were prepared to really look hard. And the pricing was favorable as a buyer. I mean, definitely prices were down. People were selling under pressure. And so I think a little bit of capital went a long way in 2021. As we move into 2022, to be honest, I don't see a lot changing. I think that we're still going to see suppressed asset prices. I think we're still going to see very low EBITDA multiples. You know, EBITDA multiples are quite a good reflection of how people see growth. We are definitely in a low growth environment in South Africa. And so there's not a lot of optimism about us hitting, you know, high GDP growth rates, even with recoveries. So I think good opportunities to acquire assets if you have very scarce capital. As John said, very, very difficult to bring emerging market money into South Africa when we have such a low GDP growth, because emerging market money is essentially following high GDP growth. And, you know, we have all of the risks of an emerging market and none of the benefits of a higher growth rate. And so that's a big negative. So as a country, we really need to think hard about that. I think at the moment, I think we're finding funding scarce, even from within our shores. That's always been an issue in South Africa. And if anything, that's even tightened up further. So difficult to get your hands on capital, but I think if you've got some capital at your disposal, then I think there's some amazing opportunities to be had. For us, the focus in 2022 is going to really be about business optimization, increasing margins, increasing cash flow management, managing assets and capex and so forth. And then what capital we have available, which is primarily on balance sheet, you know, we will, there's some amazing opportunities if you're smart about what you do.
But that is really, if you take that point and to build on that, Sam, quite positive for the private equity story. In a low growth environment, you're going to require a management team to be looking to add or extract value through very innovative strategies. And that's what GPs do, really. It's not about waiting for those rising tides to lift all boats here. So I suppose those funds that want to go out and raise funds will surely be using that in their sales pitches. It's a buyer's market as well. So potentially here we have a good vintage year coming up if you're looking to exit in 7 years' time. How are you reading it?
I think that one of the starting points whenever you're looking at an outlook for any particular asset class, you know, something as broad as private equity, is to understand that always, but even more so now, there's an enormous variety of investment strategies that fall within your private capital markets, right? So, you know, even ranging from, and, you know, John mentioned that it was a bit of a bumper year for venture capital, and South Africa has been quite traditionally a later stage private equity market. Certainly the majority of our capital has historically gone there. But, you know, as the world has been changing, and this is a trend that is not a recent trend, but certainly is a trend that has been accelerated by COVID, is the fact that, you know, the dynamics that you find in the market combined with largely from a social change perspective, you know, volatility in the market, combined with all of the technological changes that we've been seeing over, let's call it the last 5 to 10 years, is that in actual fact there's been, you know, an even greater proliferation of different investment strategies. So, you know, for me, this acceleration is actually a good thing, and it's actually very much a good thing even in the South African market. We see and have always built our strategy on investments that are, for the large part, disconnected from GDP growth. So they are either driven by technological innovation trends that are applicable globally, but also particularly in the dynamics that we see in our local market. And when I say local, I mean also regional. But also the social demand for, you know, education and healthcare and you know, food security, climate change, all of that is presenting opportunities in all of this volatility and mix. And yes, One of the other aspects to consider is the fact that these are global growth trends, but in the South African market, we do have better, more attractive pricing. So there is almost a, I hate using the word arbitrage, but there is an uplift that is possible coming from investments that emanate from the South African market, but which have these kind of more regional and global growth prospects. And that is where we are starting to see. It's been a fascinating, you know, a couple of years in terms of the inbound interest from foreign investors, and largely in the tech space. I mean, last year is the highest year by far in terms of tech investment, particularly in the VC sector. Sonari doesn't invest in the VC part of the market, but because there is this blurring of private equity and venture capital, there's a lot of co-investment that happens at this converging point of, you know, technology-enabled investments. It was over $4 billion, which was more than twice what it was in the previous 2 years. And certainly, if we consider that when I started investing 15 years ago in technology-related assets in South Africa, it's almost an infinity amount of growth since that time. So there are huge opportunities that are rising. But certainly, we're sitting on a bit of an unstable footing, and no investors like that. So it really is incumbent, I think, to your point, Michael, it's incumbent on the GP to find ways to manage these risks and to unlock this value. It's not about picking the right assets, about picking the right assets and then figuring out how to manage those assets to be able to manage the risks as well as the opportunities.
Mm. And you can manage those risks and opportunities, to your point, and Langa, just to bring you in, if you know what the rules of the game are. The problem, and what we saw particularly with that Burger King ruling by the competition authorities, is that the rules of the game are sometimes seen to be fairly arbitrary and capriciously applied by our regulatory authorities. How much damage did that do in particular?
Yeah, I think you're right. We always want to understand what the rules of the game are at the point of entry. And I think that in of itself, the ruling that the Competition Commission made last year had an impact, and it did work towards creating some doubt in the minds of investors around what the requirements are for someone to enter into the South African market, particularly from the perspective of BE and public interest. And I think it is fortuitous that I think later on in the conversations, I think the commission and the investors and the sellers have managed to find each other. And I think that's positive sentiment that also needs to go into the market, that there's always a conversation to be had. But I do think the South African scenario, where we do have such a large overhang in terms of policies that are not finalized, will play a considerable impact. I mean, just in this year alone, we're looking to see what will be the outcome of COFI, what will be the outcome of the update on Regulation 28. We're looking to see if these muted changes, where they want a two-bucket in savings system, will come into play. And all of these will be legislation that will have a significant impact on private equity and private equity in South Africa in particular, in that it will change the landscape in which we're operating. Do we have access to more capital? Is the regulation of private equity becoming more stringent? Are pension funds now hamstrung in terms of how much money they can actually put into alternatives? And the quicker we can get to points of certainty, the quicker we can get back to actually actualizing what are great opportunities. I think I agree with Andrew and Seb that I think you are seeing a great amount of potential deal flow. You are seeing gems that traditionally under different markets conditions would not have come into the market because of the pressure that the pandemic has put into them. I think you are seeing the application of innovation, but all that has to hinge from a guaranteed and known playing field. I always like to say the playing field doesn't necessarily always have to be level, but if we at least know where the portals are on the pitch, we know how to navigate our way around them to actualize the opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you go and play on a Bunsen burner in Delhi, that those are the conditions you're going to face. You may not like them. You may prefer the Newlands Green Mamba that we had the other day. But at least you know what the conditions are. And it's when investors are uncertain about those conditions that it does become difficult. I want to move on now to the global macro conditions that are facing private equity. And as I mentioned in the introduction, rising interest rates. And that obviously impacts the cost of capital. John, the thing about South African private equity is that it uses leverage, but it certainly doesn't use leverage to the same extent that we see the BlackRocks and other global private equity firms. What sort of impact do you see this rising interest rate environment having on our local private equity market?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. I mean, I guess rising interest rates impact the amount of debt a portfolio company can raise, because if you only have a certain amount of free cash flow, you know, that's the amount of money which is available to service your debt. So I suspect maybe there'll be slightly less debt raised. But having said that, I'm not sure that the kind of interest rate rises that we are likely to see are likely to have a fundamental impact on the model or on the amount of debt. You know, maybe there'll be a little bit less debt, a little bit more equity, maybe some creative financing options. But I don't see the interest rate factors really being a major factor. I mean, you know, if the rates went from 12% to 25%, like they did back in the 1980s after I bought my first house, then maybe I'd have a slightly different view. But I don't think we're in that kind of interest rate market as yet. There's a little bit less money available, but most South African portfolio companies are not highly geared. We went through the sort of Edcon era where we were looking at really making money out of financial leverage. But that has not typically been the South African private equity model. The South African private equity model has been to grow really good, globally competitive businesses and to realize value that way. And I don't see that changing this year.
To build on that, Andrew, and we know that clearly private equity is all about debt, and it's about ratcheting up the earning potential through leverage. But through the pandemic, we also saw those companies with debt-laden balance sheets were the ones that came under the most stress and pressure. And we see new business models evolving, capital-light models. How do you see the usage of debt evolving in South African private equity deal-making over the next 12 months?
Yeah, I think to John's point, it's changed significantly over the years. When we acquired Serbo, we put in 7x EBITDA leverage. I don't think you could do that anymore. it worked well for us. You know, at the end of the day, what happens is your leverage multiples are low in this right now, probably call it 2x EBITDA. On average, we in a normal market, you're probably at 2.5 to 3x EBITDA. As John said, the interest rate isn't the major determining factor in that. Even a small increase in interest rates won't really move that multiple. But if you're keeping your eye on something, it's your EBITDA to debt relationship. We are at a low point, and that impacts pricing. Typically, your banks have a very big influence over pricing. They don't like to see businesses being bought at greater than, you know, double the leverage. So they don't want to be in so they need to have a certain amount of equity cover. So when you have a low EBITDA multiple, the biggest impact here is on pricing, on valuations. The banks are very nervous about the economy. They are nervous about serviceability, and they are working hard to make sure that everybody's at a manageable debt level. And I think ultimately that's good, because you don't want to over-leverage companies basically going to the wall on an ongoing basis.
Debt is a two-way street.
I think the way it equalizes itself is, you know, deal flow will happen. The sellers pay the price of this, because if you're selling an asset and you can only leverage it 2x, you just get a lower equity price, full stop. And so you just get lower prices. Your ability to service your debt is obviously better. So if you're buying strong cash flow companies, you're deleveraging quicker, more quickly. You have the ability to re-leverage and re-leverage. So you haven't lost your ability to manage your balance sheet and to manage your capital efficiency. But certainly you're putting a ceiling on acquisition prices.
And to build on an earlier point that was raised, it does come back to the fact that it does look very much like a buyer's market. Sam, if you were to look at where the market is currently, would you say that 2022 has the potential here, given the opportunity that you've just articulated and the pricing points that you're acquiring these potentially very good assets at, to be one of the better vintages?
It's a natural conclusion to draw. I do think, though, that we are, again, it goes back to which particular part of the market that you're playing in. Some prices are, driven by global pricing that has actually started to impact on our local pricing market, going back to the point of having international investors coming into the South African market. But I certainly do still think that this is a good time to be investing. And I think a lot of the businesses that have made it through these very tough times, South African businesses, it's extraordinary. I mean, we've operated through these types of conditions. They change a little bit, but they're generally quite tough conditions. We've operated through them for literally decades. So, but I do think that the last 2 years have put a lot of strain on the economy. And I think that, the stronger businesses have endured. And I do think that there's a good timing opportunity here to find good assets, still at reasonable prices, but which have got a really strong underpin and really good opportunity. So, yes, I would tend to think that this could be a very good year, being almost at an inflection point.
Langa, as we've got 4 minutes to go around the panel table, and if you'd like to build on the year, go right ahead. But I'd like to end on a bit of a crystal ball gaze as well. What do you see as the big trends? Maybe pick a sector or two as well that are going to be driving activity in the market this year.
Yeah, I think thematically, South Africa, we are still underpinned by the need, one, to grow the economy, two, to create jobs, and three, to address the issues around social cohesion and the deployment of capital to try and address some of those issues. But I think we do also follow on from some of the international themes that we have seen. I think we should anticipate that in the South African context, tech, e-commerce will continue to play a significant role in terms of investment themes across diverse sectors. Each of the sectors, I think, where one will be investing, they'll be looking to see how they can enhance the application of technology in those to more or less make them disaster resilient, as we have seen happen with many of the businesses that already had those platforms during COVID. But I do, and I am in favor, I think, of the food security space. I think that's one of the areas where there will be a greater impetus in terms of investment. And I think we're also carrying on from the last 2 years and some of the sentiment coming out of the presidency, we will see an increase in drive towards trying to attract investment into the infrastructure space. I think we do have a large gap that needs to be filled, both across economic and social infrastructure. And I expect that to be a theme that continues to recur in 2022.
Yeah, but I mean, forget the smart cities. We just need to get back to basics when it comes to infrastructure. John, driving around the country, having the good fortune to head out to Kruger and do a trip through the Midlands. The small towns in this country are absolutely falling apart if you just look at the basics of roads and water infrastructure. But I digress. John, what do you see as the big trends as we head into the new year?
Yeah, I would agree with Langer. I think infrastructure, green energy, definitely fintech, food. And I think generally in the sort of general space, perhaps more mid-market than sort of really big ticket deals. And as I said, I just think the VC environment is growing and there's going to be a lot more money available off a low base for startups and early stage investments.
Yeah, well, Kit Vinsel had a smile about as broad as his sobriety sword when I was chatting to him about the outlook for VC the other day. Andrew, how do you see it playing out?
I think that there's a very, very strong trend towards responsible investing, impact, ESG. And these are themes that are really underpinning where capital is available and where globally there's a thrust towards investing responsibly. In Rockwood, we very focused on businesses that can grow and create employment. And so businesses like our Bravo business and our EnviroServe business, the themes there for us are very much in terms of how we're managing those business impact, making sure everything that we can do, we're doing, how can we grow employment, how can we solidify this manufacturing base, which is at the end of the day, the heart of the South African economy. And the types of acquisitions, the sort of global roofing, the Noens carpets acquisitions, they're following that theme, which is impact, responsible investing, create employment, manage businesses for cash flow, because there's not a lot of growth out there. Although having said that, our earnings grew 23% in the last 2 years, but showing off, sorry.
You had to
I had to drop it in, but you can do it. And we've created a lot of employment and done a lot of responsible things. And I think that these are the themes that investors are looking for. And I think these are the themes that our government is looking for. And certainly we are following those trends.
And it's part of unlocking a lot of the LP capital that sits in the pension fund space. As you say, those investors now looking for that from their funds to not just be showing good IRRs or EBITDA multiples, but having those social impacts on job creation and building infrastructure that has a societal good as well. We just have to end it right there. Sadly, we've run out of time. That was Andrew Dewar, managing partner at Rockwood Private Equity. He was joined around the table by Samantha Pockroy, founder and CEO of Sonari Capital, John Bellew of Bowman's, and Langa Madonko, SAVCA board member and deputy president of ABSIP. Period to their crystal balls to give us the outlook for private equity in 2022.
This show was brought to you by Nedbank Business Banking. Wouldn't you rather have a bank that puts the partner back into partnership? Search Nedbank Bigger Picture Business Banking.